Hello and welcome back to the Elite Football Show. My name is Haider Rabbani and I'm your host as ever today. I hope everyone is doing well during the lockdown. I know it's difficult times for everyone and we've got the international break now. So I really do hope everyone out there is keeping safe. I hope that you are all doing well in terms of your mental health. And I hope that we can bring you a great show today. I'm joined again by Windy. I'm really excited to have you back on, Windy. We had a great chat last time. How are you doing, mate? It's been a little while and we've got a lot to talk about today, haven't we?
We certainly have. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Back by unpopular demand. I'm fine. It's tough. It's really tough out there. I'm very lucky that I've got a job that I've been in for many years and I get treated really well. And that kind of my work gives me a sense of purpose to kind of get through the days. But it's hard times. And I think we just all need to be there for each other, for our friends and family and be kind to one another to get through this.
100%. You know, as we spoke off air, I haven't been in a job. I haven't worked since March. I was made redundant in July and the job hunt is difficult and it is about being positive, you know, and that leads us on obviously to Twitter, which we're going to talk about and a little event that did happen. If some people haven't heard about it, we will talk about it today. But before we do that, guys, make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. We're on our road to 1K. Hopefully we can do that by the end of the year. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts as well. So we are pushing the audio. So make sure you check it out. Make sure you check out Windy's podcast as well. We'll put the link in the description. But Windy, let's go straight into it. We had a fantastic chat last time, didn't we? I really enjoyed it. You've been one of my favorite guests. It was so nice to sit down with a rival fan and just talk. No bias, no reactionary, no clickbait. It was wonderful. And unfortunately, when we put out the short clip, I'll allow you to talk about the short clip about what you were trying to say so you can sort of put your point across. But didn't really think much of it, really, if I'm being honest with you. I thought it's a very fair point you had. You prefer Pochettino to Mourinho. I don't think you said anything offensive to anyone. But the backlash was just disgusting. And like I was saying, you know, I haven't got a job. You've got to be positive. Well, when you're going on social media and you're seeing just abuse after abuse and it seems to be a societal problem, it really makes you think, doesn't it, that what's the point of all of this? What's the point of Twitter? Because people go on there and they're fake accounts and they just abuse people. And the abuse you got was horrible. And, you know, we've spoken a fair bit, haven't we, since then. And, you know, I felt terrible about it. And I know you wrote that piece as well. And obviously it's not my fault. But it's so sad that the fact you had a different opinion, you were called so many abusive names. And I really wanted you to come on and talk about it because I know you took some time off and I want to hear your side of the story as well.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock, to be honest, because like you say, we did have a really, really good chat. It was great. And we covered a whole variety of different subjects and we went deep on some of them. And then there were some throwaway comments. I don't even want to say what I said last time because I'm scared. Isn't that ridiculous? If you want to know what I said last time, the video is still up. You can also read my blog about it. I've got a blog called windycoys.com and I wrote a long article about what happened. And I just wanted to make it really clear that Haider was amazing and very supportive to me throughout and sent me supportive messages and wanted to try and help where he could. So I just wanted to make that very clear because people have said that you did it deliberately to try and garner attention, et cetera, et cetera. The conversation really wasn't like that. And, the statement I made in my eyes was quite uncontroversial, but it turned out it's not. And it was. So basically what happened was this. We posted the video. You posted the video. I retweeted it. I've got a big following on Twitter and some people saw it as was going to happen, watched the video and didn't like what they heard. And started sort of basically saying, like, what are you saying, mate? Why are you saying this thing that you said? Why would you think that? Why would any Spurs fan say that? And then it multiplied, it escalated and, you know, had people ripping the video and editing it. So it was just focused on me. And I was getting DMs. I was getting, so it started off with a series of replies to the tweet. Fine, you know, I'm working, I'm just ignoring it. I can put it on mute, I can ignore it, it's fine. We've got some really nice replies as well, people saying that was really cool, enjoyed the show, etc., etc. But the negative ones were starting to far outweigh the positive ones. And I've always had this sort of, I would say there's always been a group of people on Twitter who've kind of had it in for me, bubbling under the surface. I think, I don't know, maybe I'm quite a straight-laced person. I'm quite a nerdy type on Twitter. So they probably find my style off-putting, maybe. I've not deliberately ever tried to sort of court controversy, or I don't tweet stuff for the sake of tweeting it to gain followers, etc. It's just not my style. So I don't know. I rub people up the wrong way. There's definitely a group of people that I rub up the wrong way. And it was difficult, because what then happened was I started seeing threads pop up about me. So not in response to the tweet that you put out, or that, you know, the stuff that I was retweeting, but threads were popping up, and then people were sending me stuff, tagging me in it, saying, you know, have you seen this? Which, I mean, they were trying to be helpful in doing that, but it's actually really unhelpful when there's a bit of a pylon coming on. You don't want to see people just slating you and your opinion.
Ignorance is bliss, isn't it, Windy? You'd rather not have known about it at all, and Twitter's a big, terrible place, I would say, and you'd rather you didn't know that was happening, didn't you?
Absolutely. And the thing is, and no, of course, no one was to know this, but at the time this was all happening, my other half had had to call 111 for her dad, who was really unwell, and he passed away, you know, a few days later. And we were going through a really tough time. She'd been caring for her father. I've been with her for 8 years. I was really close with her dad. I was seeing him sort of slowly decline in health, and it was horrendous. And that happening on that day was just really bad timing. But I started feeling really anxious, and I'm quite a resilient person. I deal quite well with things generally. I'm very lucky in that respect. I've got good mental health. I kind of look after myself well, but I started feeling, oh God, you know, everyone hates me. Literally, I've ruined the reputation of my podcast, which I've built over 4 years. I've worked so hard to build up, and my friends are going to think less of me. And, you know, what have I done? Why did I do this? Just to make one stupid throwaway comment? And yeah, your mind goes to the worst place, and you start thinking the worst. Basically, I really came close to shutting my Twitter account, which is, it sounds so extreme, but I just wanted it all to go away. I wanted it all to stop and to go away. What I decided to do in the end was just take a break from Twitter, and it was the best thing I could have done, and the best thing I have done in a long time, was to just get off that hellmouth of a platform for some time. And I kind of made it clear that, you know, what was happening wasn't okay, and I wasn't okay, because I think people just sort of go, well, you've got a platform, you said something on a show, you deal with the consequences. And I mean, that is, to some degree, I kind of agree. I went on a show to talk about football, and I made some comments about football, so I should deal with the consequences of people disagreeing with me. But it went so far beyond football, and I was getting people wishing me dead. And that's no exaggeration. You know, I was getting DMs of people wishing me dead, which is, I mean, it's a game. It's a hobby. It's a love for all of us, but it's a hobby. And it just got so extreme, and I can talk about it now because I'm so over it. It's fine. Like, what happened happened, but at the time it was tough, man. It was really tough. Anyway, the break from Twitter happened. I came back. I wrote an article about it, and I felt so much better having written the article. And I just got this huge outpouring of support from people. I was getting Twitter DMs. I was getting emails. I was getting replies to the blog. Just people being really nice. People that I didn't even, you know, I've never conversed with before were sending me nice messages. People that I've clashed with before or have clashed with me before sending me nice messages, and it meant the world. And it made me realize that, you know, there is a group of people who just don't care. Just, they see someone who they think is a sort of a public figure, if you like. I mean, I don't see myself in that way, but people see me in that way, as it turns out.
Well, Windy, you are though. You've got what, 45,000. What you say is taken seriously, but that's to do with your hard work. You've built your credibility up, and although you are a really humble guy, you know, I've spoken to you many times on DM, and obviously we've done a podcast together, and we've spoken today, and you're a really humble guy. You're hardworking. I know that you would never do anything, you know, you would never think that you're something else or anything like that. But the unfortunately, when someone's got such a big following, people wait for you to slip up. People wait for you to do something. And I felt like, for me, I'll tell you how I felt. I felt so guilty because I was getting comments as well. Most of it was aimed at you, and that annoyed me. And I started going in on a few people because I said, you know, listen to the whole video. And you know what? The crazy thing is, I remember, because what I do is, you can see me writing stuff down. When I make short clips, I write down the timestamps. I thought, this is quite interesting because we're talking about Pochettino, but, you know, et cetera, we're speaking about Jose. But the biggest thing was that I never once thought how this is going to blow up. By the time I got rid of it, because remember I asked you, I said, look, I'm going to take this down. 22,500 people had seen that video, and it wasn't even a day. 22,500 people. And for me, someone who's a small podcaster, I just felt awful. And I got comments saying you make money out of, you know, make on people's misery to me. And I said, you know what, like at the end of the day, maybe watch the video, maybe watch the whole thing and watch, but people don't do that. And this is a problem. And it is a societal problem, I think. And I find this on Twitter. If you've got a different opinion to someone, the first thing someone will say to you under is, oh, what are you talking about, you mug? Something along those lines, and probably worse. And my strategy has always been, I'll be like, why are you calling me that? And then I'll try and talk to it. And by the end of it, people will say, oh, thanks for the interaction. But why does it have to be your first thing? I saw some of the comments to you and I was genuinely appalled. And what I did actually, so I deleted the tweet, but I tried to download all the tweets. There's some way you can download it so that I could literally go and report every single one. In the end, it didn't work for some reason. But some of them were horrible. And I felt awful, mate. I felt so guilty because you trusted me, first time you've been on video, and I felt like I'd driven you off Twitter. And yeah, it stuck me for a long time. And I read your article, and it was a brilliant article, and it was really well thought out, and it made me feel a lot better. But we shouldn't be sitting here right now on the second time we do a podcast together as a United fan and Spurs fan, and we shouldn't be talking about the fact that you had a different opinion to someone else, and that it caused you so much pain, really, didn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's sad. It's really sad. It's been a real lesson to me. I'm definitely not going to even... I was going to say I'm not going to court controversy in future, but I didn't think I was courting controversy this time around. But it's made me really rethink how I use Twitter. And like you, I try and converse with people who respond to me as well. And, you know, I like to believe that not everyone's bad. And so if someone's saying something crappy to me, I kind of want to pull them up on it in a kind of way that makes them think, oh, this is a person I'm talking to. It's not a Twitter account. There's a human being behind this avatar. I mean, maybe that's partly it. You know, I have got a figure, a character in my avatar. And maybe that in some way lends itself to people not thinking of the person behind the account, and that person's got feelings and other things going on in their life. Maybe there's something in that. I'd never thought of it like that before. Yeah, I've definitely thought of how I'm using Twitter, and I'm cutting back a lot. I mean, in a sense, it was really useful for me because, you know, my habit was to just pick up my phone and automatically, you know, press the button, open Twitter, scroll. I moved the app. I deleted it briefly. I deleted it for a week and then I brought it back and I put it in a folder. So now I have to actually think about it. I'm going to Twitter to do a task, that is to make a tweet or read something in particular. I'm not just going there to mindlessly scroll like I used to do. And so it's been really helpful from that perspective. But yeah, I would have liked that help to have come in a different way, to be honest.
No, I completely agree. You know, I've since we've last spoken, I'm now doing a quite a big tactical podcast, Man United one, with quite a big journalist, Rob Blanchett. I'm not sure if you've heard of him, and he's well respected. And you know, I've started getting abused. You know, I'm not anything big, and I never pretend to be. I do this out of the enjoyment, but it makes you think, doesn't it, that you're literally doing something that you enjoy, and you're trying to put out great content out there, and there's always someone. And that block button's been used a lot by me. And I don't pretend that I'm better than anyone else, but there's a lot of people that think that because you've got a big following, you think your opinion's better. It's a really strange thing. And, you know, I'd never been exposed to Tottenham, you know, sort of Twitter, the Twitter world of Tottenham fans. since we put the video out with you, actually, a couple have followed me and I've followed them back, and really lovely people. And I've had a few Spurs fans on before, and I've spoken to people like Ricky Sachs, who's lovely as well. And, you know, he's someone that I've spoken to before. But it really opened up a side. I always thought Tottenham was, I know you can't judge it on the Twitter, you know, the Twitter world or football Twitter, but I always thought Tottenham was a very family club. And what I saw was something I never thought I would see. I would never see Spurs, so much infighting with Spurs fans. I never thought that was what it was. My brother's an Arsenal fan, and we both said that because he's the producer behind all this. He said, I never knew Tottenham Twitter was like that. You can expect that from United. You can expect that from Arsenal. You can expect that from Liverpool. It actually made me a bit disappointed, because when I think of Tottenham as a club and I think of Tottenham fans, I know a lot of Tottenham fans, and they're all, I'm not saying we should paint them all with the same brush, but it really made me put Spurs in the same bracket as, in terms of their fan base, as United's, because United's is terrible. And that's really sad. And I'll let you talk about that a little bit. But is this always something that you see with every fan base? Or is it maybe just something that on that day was terrible, and generally the Tottenham fan base on Twitter is quite fair?
It's quite hard for me to answer, because I don't really know. I mean, like you, I don't really appreciate how divided other fan bases are, but we've definitely got factions. I mean, I think it's partly, we've got some quite divisive characters at the club. So Daniel Levy, for example, really, really divides people. There's a lot of people who literally have Enoch out in their Twitter name. And not a small group, you know, it was a small group originally, but there are lots of people who are sick of Daniel Levy and Enoch and want them gone from Spurs. Equally, our manager, Jose Mourinho, is a very divisive character. So naturally that can create divides, even just when talking about opinions on football. But then I think social media has become ever more divisive anyway. I mean, partly in the UK since Brexit, it's literally Leavers and Remainers being opposed on seemingly all issues relating to Brexit, but wider than that. And just generally the left and right find it really hard to find any middle ground. And I think that then filters down into football. And you do have, I mean, suppose we're a London club. Londoners tend to be quite left wing, I would say, on the whole. But a lot of Spurs fans are quite right wing. They live in Hearts, Essex. They've got money. And so naturally we do have quite a lot of right-wing fans. And so you've got a bit of a divide there, the left-wing Spurs fans, the right-wing Spurs fans. I think this is a thing that comes naturally to some degree. Maybe in like one town clubs, maybe it's a bit less like that because they're all kind of pulling together and wanting the same thing. I don't know. I don't know how it works, but yeah, I certainly in the last 5, 6, 7 years, I felt like we're quite a divided fan base, to be honest.
Yeah, it's something which I actually never saw under Pochettino. He's someone who I felt actually divided. On the whole, you would say majority are pulling in a direction under Poch. And I think wherever Jose goes, he does this. We might as well move on to Spurs' really great start to the season. But thank you, Windy, for talking about this, because I know this is something which I wanted to get you on, and I'm really happy to see you doing really well. It makes me really happy. And I'm honoured to get you, that you've come back on and you've accepted the invitation, because, you know, great guy and really great football opinions. So I appreciate that, mate. But yeah, on to Spurs. Spurs have been fantastic this year, I think. Start was difficult after the loss against Everton. But since then, really hitting top form, second top scorers as well, just behind Chelsea, sitting second in the league. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I see Spurs as title challengers this year. Joe Gomez has just got injured today as well, so Liverpool are out without their two first choice centre backs. It's a really odd season, isn't it, this year, where anyone can win it. You're seeing some big teams struggle, like City. You're seeing the smaller teams like Villa do better, or should I say small teams, a big club Villa is. But yeah, talk to me a bit about Spurs' start to the season, and are you feeling as excited as everyone else is that, you know, this Spurs team possibly could go close to challenging since, you know, the last time that Pochettino was here when he challenged?
So it's quite hard not to get caught up in the excitement, because so many people were just like, I think football fans love to just be optimistic and enjoy the ride, right? It's a nice thing to just be able to go, you know, whatever happens, happens, but we're doing really well. Let's just enjoy it. I have not been so much like that recently, I would admit freely. I've been a lot more kind of, and it's again, since Mourinho joined, I've struggled with him as an individual, and therefore I struggled to kind of fully get behind what he's trying to do at Spurs. But I'm not ashamed to say that I've been very impressed with the way he's managed this season so far. And, you know, if he does genuinely challenge for the title, I will be eating my words, you know, and happy to do so. Very happy to do so. I'll never see eye to eye with him as a person, and he's not my cup of tea, but, you know, look at what he's done in his career. He's an outstanding manager, has been an outstanding manager. I thought he was done. I thought he was washed. I thought, you know, his last experiences probably meant that he's done as a top level coach. And I'd love for him to prove me wrong. I would say so far we are doing well, but we're probably about par when you look at the teams we played. So we haven't really had a challenging start. Having said that, you know, we've got lots of new players and they've settled in really, really well. And that's highly encouraging. Our next run, of seven games, we play like City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Wolves, Leicester. It is insane. You know, it's a really tough run. We're going to know a lot more after that run about how good Spurs actually are, because, you know, it's all well and good kind of grinding out wins against Burnley and against West Brom. And Brighton, to some degree, I would say we ground that out. It wasn't a good performance, really. And you know, I completely agree with the sort of trope that you have to win dirty in those games to win a title, but not every week. You know, you kind of want to every month maybe you'll win a game dirty. So there's not enough there yet for me to grab hold of and say yes, we're genuine title contenders. But at the same time, it's going really well, and there's lots to be happy about as a Spurs fan.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair summary. It's difficult. This season's a very strange one. Even as a United fan, you hear some factions saying it's only been seven games, and you can kind of, I feel like it works two ways. You can refer that to the teams at the top saying it's only been seven or eight games, but then when you bring it back to say United, you're like, yeah, it's been seven games. You're playing badly. Do you know what I mean? So it's a really funny one. I mean, look, when I look at Tottenham, I don't see many weaknesses, if I'm being honest with you. The biggest thing for me, I would say, is that Kane seems to have gone to another level. And that's kind of what I want to go on to next. Jose has got it right. And I want to ask you sort of where he's got it right. Kane and Son's partnership is phenomenal. It's probably the best in the league right now. Very, very impressive. The signings have been good. I mean, I always said Højbjerg, I said to a Spurs fan on Twitter, I said Højbjerg will be a really good signing because he's just what Jose Mourinho likes. Not too expensive, but does the role you want him to do. Then you've got Matt Doherty, who I don't think has really hit the heights, but again, solid right back in the league. Sergio Reguilón is someone that I really liked and I wanted United to sign him. He's fantastic going forward. I knew that. I'd done a player analysis of him as well. If any Spurs fans want to check that out, just check it out on the channel. I did a big analysis on him because I thought he was joining United. We got Alex Telles, so I'm pretty happy. And then you've got Gareth Bale as well. Hasn't really hit his stride yet, but scored a goal. And you know, it must be great to have him back. So I'll probably miss a few. But Ndombele is one that I've been very impressed with. We're starting to see the player that we thought we'd see. And when we last spoke, we were questioning, is he going to be Jose's Paul Pogba? What I do want to ask you is, so I'm going to ask you what he's done right. But I also do want to ask you, what's the difference between when Jose was at United and what's happened at Spurs? Because he did get the money. I mean, in his first season, he got Zlatan, he got Pogba, he got Bailly, Mkhitaryan, big players. Why is it working at Spurs? And why do you think it didn't really work at United?
Maybe we were coming from a higher base. Maybe we had more of the groundwork done. I mean, so Pochettino spoke about the squad needing a painful rebuild, and that was undoubtedly true, but there is still a core. There was a core of players there that was strong, that was really good. You know, you mentioned Kane and Son. They're just two of the best players in the league. I mean, Kane is the best striker in the world at the moment. There's no doubt about that. He's insane right now. And I would say he's top three strikers in the world generally. in my opinion, with Lewandowski, with Haaland. So what's Mourinho got right? Kane's the obvious one. I don't know if you've seen All or Nothing. I can't remember when we spoke, if you said you've seen it. Yeah. Mourinho appealed to Kane on All or Nothing, and he sort of gets him in his office and he talks to him about making him into a star. And Nathan, who does the podcast with me, The Extra Inch, Nathan said that he felt like they were having two different conversations. Like Kane's going, oh, right, he's going to make me a football star who will win trophies and win the league and win golden boots and everything. And Mourinho saying, I'm going to make you a celebrity. I'm going to make you a cult figure. I'm going to make you a superstar outside of football as well as inside football. Like me, you know, Mourinho is he's a very well-known person in himself. Whatever he's done, I mean, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, that conversation has now led to Kane being this player. There's obviously been an ongoing dialogue and it's worked magnificently. And he's also tactically changed things a little bit, tweaked things a little bit. So we know that Mourinho plays on the counter. As a part of that, he has asked Kane to drop even deeper than he was dropping under Pochettino, pick up the ball and play forward really early over the top for Son, who is, you know, an outstanding runner from out to in, gets on the end of three balls. And that link up has just been insane this season. It's worked really well. So that I would say that is the main thing he's got right for Spurs this season. You're completely right to point out the other signing. So Reguilon, I absolutely adore that man already. He's going to be a massive favourite at our club. He's got everything. He's really tenacious. He's really fast. He's really dynamic. He's exciting. He's quite spiteful. He's got everything you want in an elite level player. And he's a significant upgrade on Ben Davis. And the other player that is winning plaudits, and rightly so, and one that I feel a little bit smug about because I've liked it for a while, is Thuy Bier. As you mentioned, he's been fantastic. He's not a special player by any means. He's not a kind of glamorous defensive midfielder. He just does everything solidly. He's got a really good understanding of the game, reading of the game, high football on-pitch IQ. He knows what's happening. He puts out fires before they even started. And we just didn't have another player who did that stuff. So he's been a godsend so far. So, yeah, there's loads that's going right. And it's things are moving in the right direction. And it's lots of fun.
Yeah, fantastic summary there. I would say about Højbjerg as well is that he's almost like Jose's Matic, I would say, when he was at Chelsea, where a defensive midfielder in today's game is probably the most important player in the team. That's my opinion, because that can change you from being a good side, but it could take you to the next level. And when you look at the defense last season, and it's not really changed in personnel, has it? I mean, Eric Dier's dropped back. I've been impressed with him, by the way. I actually think that's his best position, playing in defense. Defense is not much different apart from Reguilon. Okay, you've changed the wing fullbacks, which is very important. In today's game, the fullbacks need to be having a presence going forward, something Man United don't have, unfortunately, which is a bit frustrating. But having someone who's, like you're saying, got that footballing IQ, who's smart, who can shield the defense and allow a set of platform for the players who play more attacking to go forward, that's underrated. And I feel like that's what Jose didn't have last season. You're not conceding silly goals. I mean, okay, we've got the West Ham game, which was which was crazy. But what I've been impressed with Jose is this looks like a Jose Mourinho side. And I don't know about you, but I feel like the fact that he has got the players he wanted this summer is a big factor in why you're seeing what he's seeing. I do question that if he hadn't got who he wanted, would he be sulking? And that's sort of the question I want to push towards you, because we've seen that at United where he got the players he wanted, he was fine. Didn't get the players he wanted, he was sulking. So do you think that, does that worry you a little bit that maybe let's say Spurs don't win it, they come second. In the summer, he wants money. We don't know what's going to happen because fans aren't back. This is everyone, by the way. Everyone's going to be hit. The bottom line is going to be hit. I believe Spurs' match day revenue is close to 90 million with the new stadium, I believe, or 95 million. Maybe you can correct me on that. It's one of the biggest after United. It's about 110 million. That's a big chunk off your bottom line and your profits. And is there a worry that if he doesn't get the players next season to push on, that you could see the sort of old Jose Mourinho that we've been accustomed to the last 7-8 years?
that is always in the back of your mind, isn't it, with Mourinho? You just sort of, you're kind of waiting for something to go wrong because you know how quickly things can turn. And I'm just sort of praying that that moment doesn't come too soon. I kind of want it to carry on like this for a little while first. And, you know, to be fair, Daniel Levy seems all in. He's backed him really well so far. And Mourinho has been really pragmatic, I think, with the recruitment. I think he's been very sensible. He's not opted for players who are going to cause problems financially. All of them have been very reasonably priced. I mean, Reguilon is not cheap, but for a player of that age, of that quality, it's a bargain in my view. And then, you know, we've got the kind of potential buyback thing with Real, so potentially we don't lose anything anyway. So, Mourinho's been really pragmatic. Daniel Levy's backed him. Where I see there potentially being problems is there's now kind of group of players who aren't getting in the team and aren't being used, who will start questioning, you know, what's happening to me? What's my next move? Dele Alli is the obvious one, which I feel really sad about.
What is going on with Dele? Let's touch on Dele. I'm assuming you're going to talk about Harry Winks as well, possibly. Is he another player? What is going on with Dele Alli? Because last time we spoke about the documentary, and when Jose was saying, you know, it was quite hard on him, you're lazy in training. Something you said, which I really picked up on, and actually I clipped this up from last time, and you said you could tell, just wasn't it? He was down, he had his arms crossed, and you just knew it wasn't working. Now, I always thought it would go two ways. I feel like Jose's challenging him, but it doesn't work with Dele. That's the impression I get. Now, I think he's supremely talented. I was a massive fan of him when he joined Spurs, and he was a joy to watch. I mean, he hit 50 goals, I believe, before Lampard did, and Gerrard, I think, something crazy like that. He's obviously not getting any game time. There were talks about PSG. I think that could have been quite a good move for him, actually. They do need someone who can score from midfield. But does it look like he's going to be on his way out? And would it disappoint you if you saw Dele leave?
It doesn't look good, mate. It doesn't look good at all. And I would be so gutted. And the thing is, I'm not just gutted because I love Dele as a player. Because I really do love Dele as a player. I think he's a really interesting, unique character and someone that I like supporting. Someone I can get behind. But I just think it's wasteful as well. You know, this is a player who literally a couple of years ago was being touted as a £150 million player. And if we sold him now, we'd get, what, 30, 40 million? So you just think, well, this is a really bad time to sell. Sell high, don't sell low. You know, don't move players on permanently when they could be worth so much more again. And I think as football fans, and don't get me wrong, I'm guilty of this too, we're so quick to just assume that a player's done. You know, it was Harry Kane is a prime example. People were saying post injuries, Kane's done. He'll never be the same player he was before. And that's it now. He's just on the decline. He's Michael Owen, basically. And it's very easy to make those judgment calls. But, you know, the phrase, form is temporary, class is permanent, is a phrase for a reason. It's a cliche for a reason. Form is temporary. Dele is not done as a player. Dele is a fantastic player, and he needs to just find the right level of fitness, of confidence, needs to be in the right headspace, the right formation for him to thrive. And he will thrive because he's a very, very talented footballer. I don't think that's going to be at Spurs. I feel like, you know, Mourinho has said several times that Dele is training really well. He's taking this situation really well, basically. But he doesn't then reward that with even a place on the bench a lot of the time. You know, he's not the only time he can get in the team, and sometimes not even then, is in the Europa League, which must be really tough. Dele's been one of the key players for Spurs for a number of years, and that must be a real kick in the teeth. Plus, he's seeing the team perform well without him. So he, you know, he's probably doubting himself now as well, which, you know, it's natural you would. So it's really hard to sort of see a way forward. It's really, really difficult to sort of find a sort of happy ending for this. I just think it ends badly, and it ends with Dele leaving. And I think it's a massive shame. I do think it's a massive shame.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I'm going to ask you about the other players that you said you've got a little bit of a worry about, because squad rotation is very important. And I think Jose's always been very loyal to his, he likes to play with a smaller squad. You know, it's, he likes to probably rely on like 15 core players. You see, saw that at Chelsea, you saw that at United as well. And when you've got his trust, it's very good for you as a player. But when you don't, you just don't find your way in. And I think the teams that are going to be more successful this season, the big ones, are going to be the ones that rotate their squads as well. 10 months in nine, you've got to do it. So, yeah, who are the other players that you have a slight concern about in terms of with Jose?
So when I say concerned, I don't necessarily mean I'm worried about them not playing. I mean more that I can see some friction starting, basically. And I think the obvious candidates, so Gazzaniga, who was our second choice goalkeeper, who actually played quite a bit last year. He's not a great goalkeeper, Gazzaniga, but he's not bad. You know, he's a passable Premier League goalkeeper. And he's been usurped by Joe Hart, who, you know, the debate's been had. Joe Hart. I'm not his biggest fan as a goalkeeper, but he's got a loud voice and he seems like a nice bloke. So there's that. Davinson Sanchez is the other one. He's been linked with Everton. So there's this rumour that he might go to Everton and partner Mina, which would make a whole load of sense. Two Colombian internationals who played together for their country, then being partnered up again in the Premier League. Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense for him. If that doesn't happen, I just see him getting less and less game time. His value diminishes. He gets frustrated. And it's a shame. Not that I think he's, you know, an elite player. I don't rate him that highly. I think he's good, but he's not great. But he's another one I'd put in the list. And you mentioned Winks. I wouldn't say that Winks has been frozen out because he's definitely had more games than Dele, for example. But since we signed Kyoibe, Winks is definitely not as fancied by Mourinho. And he's another one that I think could leave. The other one that concerns me the most, and it's very early for me to be saying this, is Bergwijn, who I really, really like. But in fairness to Mourinho, when Bergwijn's been used, he hasn't played particularly well. Something's not right. Something's not right there at the moment. I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but he's not looking how he did when we signed him last year. I think he's a really, really talented young player. And I hope that we persevere with him and just keep giving him chances. But he's another one who's in that group of players that seems at risk at the moment, I would say.
Completely forgot about Bergwijn. You just look at the options you have, though, on especially in the wide positions. It's embarrassment, the riches. Now that Gareth Bale's come in, and you'd expect Gareth Bale probably to be... it's frightening. It's frightening for any rival fan to think of Son, Kane and Bale. It is absolutely frightening. If he can hit any sort of form that we saw before he went to Real Madrid. But yeah, you've got Lucas Moura as well. There's a lot of options. I mean, just it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Before I ask you the dreaded question, can Spurs challenge? I want to talk to you a little bit about Pochettino, because we saw his return on Monday Night Football. It was absolutely glorious, Windy. Absolutely glorious. I mean, I'm a massive fan. I've said it already. I've said it openly on my podcast. While Ollie's done very well to get us from A to B, I do think a manager of a world-class manager like Pochettino is what United need now with a talented squad to take you to the next level. Yes, I know he hasn't won trophies. Everyone likes to talk about that, but he's built a club like Spurs, who perhaps underachieved to a Champions League final, regular Champions League club. Now you've got a manager like Jose Mourinho. That's all because of Pochettino's really great work before, elevating the club up to a top club, in especially in the UK, and obviously in Europe as well. So, was it difficult to see Pochettino, obviously, on Monday Night Football? I thought he was fantastic. I've said it many times, and I've spoken to a few journalists who've said it's a job audition, essentially. That's what it was, and he completely passed with flying colours. Does it make you perhaps a little bit upset that you might see him in the dugout at Old Trafford, maybe not in the too distant future?
So this was the second time that he's done like a high profile thing since he left Spurs. I think he did an interview with BT Sports, I want to say, a few months ago. And that time, so other Spurs fans were absolutely losing it at him being on TV again. And at that point, I was not ready to see him. I was not in a position where I was comfortable watching him or feeling happy about seeing him again. And I was just like, he's gone, move on, leave it, it's done. You know, this time, obviously, I have moved on because it was lovely seeing him, and I really have missed him as a person, as a sort of mouthpiece for our club. Just such a nice guy. I love his ethos, his philosophy. I like the sense of community that he brings with him. You know, he has this coaching team around him that he's always had around him, and they will follow him to every club, and that's really nice. He put us on the map, really. He developed the club so much in the time that he was with us, and it was really, really lovely to see him looking so well and speaking so fondly about Spurs. And if and when I see him in the dugout at Old Trafford, I will be sad, because secretly I would like him back in our dugout, but I would wish him well. And I don't want United to win things. I want Spurs to win things. You know, let's make that very clear. But I wouldn't begrudge him winning something. Like, I would be happy for him.
Put the disclaimer in there, Windy, because I think some people might think you want to see United win. Windy doesn't, but he would like to see Pochettino win something because he deserves it.
Do you know, it's this thing. It's this sense of success doesn't necessarily mean trophies. Trophies don't necessarily mean success. But because that is the way it's viewed by so many people, he needs a trophy to appease everyone. So just give him a goddamn trophy, and then everyone realizes what an amazing manager he is. Because at the moment, you've kind of got this group of people that says, well, he never won anything. Exactly. But he didn't need to win anything to show that he's a very, very capable manager. It'll be great for him, basically. Yeah. I'd be really happy for him.
Well, it's a conversation I had yesterday with someone, and they asked me, I was on the podcast, and they asked me that, do you think the reason why Paul Pogba gets so much stick is because he's not putting out Bruno Fernandes numbers? I mean, Bruno Fernandes' goal contributions, 31 goals and assists in 33 games. That's world class for a midfielder. And that's sometimes how I look at Pochettino. The same people at United, in the United fan base, that call for Pochettino are the same ones that call for Nagelsmann. But then they say Pochettino hasn't won trophies. Pochettino, what he did at Tottenham, even at Southampton, if you look at the graphic they showed on Monday Night Football, he brought the pressing style to the Premier League. Pochettino was the first one, because he came in before Klopp. He's the first manager that's used it in the Premier League, and it's worked. That deserves a lot of praise. That he's a pioneer in that respect. He came before Bielsa, before Pep, before Klopp, and played this pressing style. And then if you looked over the years that he's been there, I think at least in the 4 years, so three times at Spurs and once in Southampton, he was only there for 1 year. Southampton and Spurs, they were the sides that worked the hardest, covered the most distance. That's pioneering. Okay, yes, he didn't win the trophy. We've had this discussion that he could have easily won the FA Cup. He could have won a League Cup, but he chose not to. Whether that's right or wrong, and that's where Jose will be different. Jose will go and win the League Cup this year. He'll challenge for it because he knows the importance of winning a small trophy. And maybe that's something Poch needed to do. And I think wherever he goes next, he has to win one of the small domestic trophies. But I agree with you. And this is what people don't understand. You said last time that Pochettino, the connection you had with him and the club, is greater than anything you've ever experienced. And that's what you mean, isn't it? That football sometimes is more than trophies. I think about it now, and United have had trophies for years, and the last 7 years have been tough. But the best time at United has actually been under Ole, and I'm not his biggest fan. And it's been after the restart, where the team are playing exciting, more like Man United's football. It wasn't when we won the Europa League under Jose, because we didn't play good football then. I know that sounds really crazy, and I'm probably going to get sick for it, but I preferred what we played after the lockdown, just recently, the Project Restart, than I did when Jose won the League Cup and the... It's really odd, but I just had more of a connection with the side. And is that something that you feel as well?
I get it, because, I mean, you had a lovely little spell there with... You know, Rashford and Mason Greenwood, who is a homegrown player who you naturally will have a connection with. It's a really nice thing to see a team like that doing well, and you do immediately sort of connect with them. Plus, your manager is a bit of a sort of legendary ex-player, so that adds to it as well. So I completely get it, and that's exactly how I feel as well. I obviously appreciate that many people don't feel that way, and it's, you know, there's no right or wrong way, as far as I see it, to support your club. It's your club. You support them however the hell you like, and don't worry what anyone else thinks. This is the problem. People do worry what everyone else thinks, and you get into situations where you have people calling me the C-word for 3 days.
I saw that, because they were saying I saw someone say to you that if they see you at the stadium, they'll do something to you. And I just thought, you support the club differently. I think where it becomes a problem, not saying this is you, where it becomes a problem is when, you know, there's perhaps an element of racism. So some people prefer the British players over the non-British players, which we see from the media. There's a bit of xenophobia there. I mean, you mentioned Greenwood's scoring. I've said this many times. I would have loved Jadon Sancho and I still would take him. But it gave me so much more pride. It would give me more pride to see Mason Greenwood flourish. Football is a funny thing because the new FIFA generation, it's about winning all the time. It's about who scores the most goals. And I do think that Ronaldo and Messi have skewed everything. I believe Ryan Giggs, his average goals, I think, per season in the Premier League was about 4 or 5. That's pitiful. I mean, you're looking at people like Zaha getting more each season. But you wouldn't turn around to me and say Ryan Giggs wasn't a legend, would you? Or he wasn't a great player. Do you think that the whole FIFA generation has actually skewed us and the whole Ronaldo and Messi generation has actually just skewed everything because they're just putting superhuman numbers? And all it is now is winning trophies. Don't get me wrong, it's about trophies. And if Jose wins a trophy with Spurs, you'll be delighted. So I just want to put that in there. You would. But there's sometimes more. Sometimes you get more of a connection when the football's beautiful. The manager in charge is just someone that you can really resonate with. I think Pochettino is that person. That's why I like him, because I think as a person, I think Ollie's a good person as well, but Pochettino seems like such a lovely guy, such a guy who's driven by values. And that to me is important personally. Is that the same with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am someone who has a value system and a belief system, and I'm unashamedly quite left-wing, progressive. And it is important to me to have a manager at the club or people at the club who do things, who are decent people, decent human beings who treat others well. That's important to me. Again, it's not important to everyone. And some people will just say, if I don't care, they could have Luis Suarez winning the league and they wouldn't care. That's fine. If that's your decision, that's whatever you want for your club is fine for you. It's not how I feel. And it's a really interesting point you make about sort of Ronaldo and Messi skewing things and, how difficult it is to ever live up to them, basically. And I think there's something in the FIFA thing maybe as well. Although, you know, when I had that pushback on Twitter, it wasn't just young people. It definitely wasn't just young people. Like, there were a lot of people who were in their 20s, 30s, 40s, happy to sort of jump in as well and join the pylon, who just desperately want to win trophies. And again, I don't not want to win trophies. Of course I want to win trophies. Being sat next to my dad at Wembley watching Ledley King lift the League Cup, we were both in tears. It was magical. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But the point was, it wasn't just about that moment. It was about the journey to that point. It was about Ledley King's history of the club to that point. And that, for me, is where the enjoyment comes from. It's not this sort of instant gratification of a trophy. So I think it's a really interesting point you make about sort of FIFA and even Ronaldo and Messi skewing things somewhat.
I completely relate to you. And I feel like we're quite aligned on that. That's the way we view football. There probably is an element with a lot of Spurs fans, perhaps even the older ones. They haven't seen a trophy, you know, like a league title for so long that they just really, it's just, that's what they want. And, you know, perhaps someone's saying that they just can't comprehend it, but there's a way of going around these things. You don't have to abuse someone. You just don't reply to it. Like, that's what I do. I see a lot. And I'm like you now. Last 2 or 3 days, I've told you, obviously, you know, off air, you know, I've had a tough couple of days, you know, I'm still looking for a job. And I've just, with Twitter, just put it down. Like I said, I used to scroll through all the time. I don't do that now. And because, you know why? Because you got to think about yourself and you got to preserve yourself. And that's what I've been doing. But Windy, last question. I know you got to rush off. This is $1 million question. It's very early to say, but I've said Spurs are challengers for the title. I really do believe that. I think it's a really strong squad. I feel like there's a right synergy between the manager and the players, and he's getting the most out of them at the moment. The question is, can Son and Kane, 1, keep their form up, and 2, keep fit? That's massive. But can Spurs challenge for title, and do you think they'll win at least one trophy this season?
Yes, I do think we'll win a trophy this season. I definitely think we can challenge for the title. I mean, for all the reasons that everyone knows about. It's a really interesting open season. And you mentioned earlier about Joe Gomez getting injured. That could open things up even more. I happen to think that Liverpool is so good in attack that they'll win the league. I just think that. I really do. But as long as... So as I mentioned earlier, we've had a really good run of fixtures, a really favourable run of fixtures, which now turn. The next seven games, we'll learn a lot more about Spurs because we're not playing teams where we can grind out a win with a set-piece goal or, you know, Matt Doherty floats the ball in for Harry Kane to flick in at the end to turn 1 point into three against West Brom. We're going to play teams who are coming at us as much as we want to go at them. And that might leave spaces behind for Son and Kane to exploit, but it also might show up the frailties in our defence. So we're going to know a lot more about Spurs' title ambitions after the next seven games. And I think, to be honest, if we win five or six of those matches, I would feel very confident that we'll finish at least second. I would feel extremely confident of that. If we... I mean, I think we'll probably get around 10 points from this run, which sounds pessimistic, but I don't think that's bad. I think that would be a reasonable return, to be honest, considering where we are, where we've come from. And I would feel fine about that, to be honest. I would think that Mourinho is doing a fine job still. But that would mean, obviously, that by that point, you'd expect Liverpool perhaps to have piled on some more points. Man City perhaps will get stronger too. And maybe some of the titles will calm down. It basically comes down to how will City and Liverpool do as well over the coming months. I think we're a match for any of the other teams, but when City and Liverpool click, they are just ahead of us.
Yeah, they're on another level, I think, from any team, and they haven't really clicked. I'm really interested to see how Liverpool do with those two injuries. Any title-winning side is built on a strong defence, and that's a worry for them. But look, I'm putting my neck out on the line. When the season started, I wasn't sure how you guys would do. I put you guys as probably just scraping fourth, perhaps fifth. But I'm saying that you're the main challenger. City will pick up again, but I really do. I see a lot of good. And you know what? I'd rather see Spurs win it than Liverpool or City. I'm being honest with you, Windy. But Windy, thank you very much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's really great to see you doing well. Where can everyone find all your fantastic content and your podcast?
Thank you, mate. It's been lovely talking to you again. Thanks for having me back.
My pleasure.
The podcast is called The Extra Inch. And it is an analytical, tactical Spurs podcast. We have a Patreon now, so which is amazing because we get to make additional content. We have money coming in. We essentially can pay Nathan, our producer, to do his production. He also makes insanely good tactical videos, which are behind our Patreon paywall. I'm making a secondary podcast now for our Patreons called Straight Off the Training Ground with Chris Summersell, who is a coach and an analyst, and they are really, really interesting conversations too. So you can find the podcast on Twitter at The Extra Inch. It's also on Facebook at The Extra Inch. You can find me at Windy Coys on Twitter, although a bit less than before. So that's it. I mean, I also do a non-football podcast called 15 Minutes. If people are interested in hearing my views on random things in life in general, if you want to hear some good drunk stories, that we did a podcast on alcohol. It was an amusing drunk story, me doing very bad things in front of my parents. So check that out too.
Absolutely. Windy, what I'll do is after this, I'll get you to send me all the links and we'll put them in the description. I'm definitely going to check that out. I'm looking for a new podcast. So, mate, it's an absolute pleasure as always. To all the listeners, honestly, please hit the like button, hit the subscribe button and check out Windy's content. It's absolutely fantastic. He's a great guy. And we will see you next time.